Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. As always, great catching up with you at the end of the week to try to sort out the madness that seems to confront us on a routine basis. The weather, the politicians, all of it. It seems to be a conspiracy. The gods must be angry. Somebody needs to take a volunteer, I guess, up to the volcano, you know, for human sacrifice. All kidding aside, again, my name is Mike Cutler. I am a retired senior special agent. And ever since 9/11, I've decided to take my show on the road to provide my perspectives on at least the immigration component and relating components that have contributed to so many of the issues that we're facing. And it's not about scapegoating immigrants or saying, let's lock the door and let nobody in. It's about exercising caution at a time when caution should be the order of the day. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I began my career with the INS back in 1971, spent 30 years with that agency. I've testified before a whole bunch of congressional hearings, most recently nearly a year ago this past March before the Senate Judiciary Committee on the issue of comprehensive reform. And so here I am today, still at it, still hammering away, trying to wake up our fellow Americans, trying to influence the politicians in Washington who at least were supposed to be elected to represent us, we the people. For those of you who want to learn a little bit more about me and about the mischief, as I like to refer to it, that I've been up to, please visit two wonderful websites. First of all, I'd like you to go to my own personal website, and that is michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. And I also want you to visit a very important website, one that's important to me and should be important to everybody. It's capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. This is the website of Californians for Population Stabilization. I'm a senior fellow with that organization, have been for a bunch of years, proud to work with them. And, you know, while the name Californians may make you think that it shouldn't concern you or wouldn't concern you unless you live in California, California, as we have seen, has become the proverbial mine in the canary in the coal mine, if I can get the words out straight. Because what has happened to California because of the fact that it's a sanctuary city, the fact that it has a massive influx of illegal aliens because of the non-secured U.S.-Mexican border and aliens who obviously enter through LAX and other international airports and fail to depart, the damage being done to California is the same damage that's being done to every state and most nearly every town and city across this great nation. And again, I want to be very clear about it. This isn't about bashing people who come here legally, who come to contribute their talents, their desires for an American dream, but this is to make certain that the legal system be made effective, be operated with a sense of integrity, in fact, with integrity, period, and that the immigration laws be ultimately enforced in such a fashion that we would discourage those who would come here with the intention of violating those laws and those borders, which, when you come down to it, are America's first line and last line defense against transnational criminals, terrorists, and others who would do harm to us. And this is a very important mission. It's a very important issue. And because of my having spent 30 years with the old INS, I believe I have a unique perspective that I think is important to share with you. And I hope that if you like this program, you will tell your friends and neighbors about it. The mainstream media is reluctant to talk about immigration. Too many people are making too much money off of this deal, except for the average American who is getting hammered. The only way I can describe it is to tell you that we are witnessing what I believe, is the engineered destruction of the middle class of the United States. And when you think about it, the middle class is synonymous not only with the American dream, but with the incentive that we've given to all Americans of every race, every religion, every ethnicity to excel. You know, that old expression that America, anyone could grow up to become president. That idea that anybody with a better idea and a better way of getting it done could write the next success story. Increasingly, it is becoming impossible. And it's becoming impossible because we are now importing more foreign workers, incredibly, folks, than the number of new jobs that are being created. Believe it or not, this is actually happening every single month. And this is something that the other side doesn't want to talk about, the people that I call the immigration anarchists. They want the borders to remain open. They want to be able to have cheap labor come across those borders. They don't want to be encumbered. They don't want to have to pay the appropriate wages to reward those people who work their tails off for them. This is simply about driving down the cost of labor so that the major corporations, primarily in the high-tech industries, can drive up so they get to share more money among themselves. But in the process, we are destroying the middle class. In fact, what most people don't know is that right now, across the world, across the planet, the country that gets the greatest amount of remittances, and a remittance, for those of you not familiar with the jargon, with the language, a remittance is money that is wired by the post office, by Western Union, by a bunch of different services, banks, and so forth, money that is wired from one country or one place to the other, that is known as a remittance. And I see that my friend Lauren Martell is on the line. I'm going to bring her on because we're going to visit with Lauren today, and we're going to have some interesting conversations. Lauren Martell, happy Friday, happy Valentine's Day. How are you, young lady?
Thanks, Michael Cutler. I'm doing great today. I had a really busy week, but it was fun and productive. And then it's always nice to end my Friday with being a guest on your radio show. So
it's always great having you on board. And I know that your weather has to be better than our weather.
Not much. This past week was very
oh, really?
Cold. I think
okay,
it's
well,
a right-wing conspiracy.
How cold is it?
Well, literally, everybody was wearing, like, boots and jackets and, you know, had to keep the heat on so the pipes wouldn't freeze and things like that, you know?
Wow. But you didn't get slammed by that nor'easter in terms of the precipitation, the rain, the snow, the ice, and all that other crazy stuff.
No, Hilton Head didn't, but Columbia did. Columbia, South Carolina did, and the upper part of the state got snow.
Wow. That's got to be a novelty. I hope people took pictures because I'm sure you don't get to see that too often. Did I lose you, Lauren? I think I lost Lauren Martell. We're going to go look for Lauren. Hopefully she will be along shortly. Lauren, by the way, is an attorney in Hilton Head, South Carolina. I think she's back on the line.
Yeah.
And she's an activist with the Tea Party. And it's all because of Lauren that a couple of years ago I was invited to speak at the Tea Party convention in beautiful Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, along with a number of presidential candidates at the time. And the hospitality was amazing, I have to tell you. And you helped make that happen, troublemaker that you are.
That first year was really fun because nobody even knew really what to expect and how it was all going to come together. And it came together, and now we just a month ago finished doing our third annual convention. And I think every year it gets even better and we learn more, and more people who really care about the issues that we're facing in America sort of connect. So that's always a great issue.
And incredibly, your folks had me come out for 3 years in a row. I think I'm the only one who's gotten the opportunity to speak for all three of those conventions or speak at those conventions.
Yes, and that is very true. And I think it's because South Carolina recognizes who is the premier expert on this particular issue, which is far-reaching. But you really do know your stuff, Mike. And it's an honor to know you and to work alongside you in some of these issues.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. And you know, here's what's so funny. You know, all the smear campaigns, and I really think that what's really got politicians from both sides of the aisle torqued, and you're an activist with the Tea Party, and I'm not a Tea Partier. I love the folks in the Tea Party, don't always agree with them, but that's what the First Amendment is about. It's about right.
Here's one of the things you have to remember about me is I pretty much like anything that ends with party. So if there's a party involved,
okay.
I probably am there.
You're just a party. Are you telling me you're a party animal, Lauren?
That's right. If there's a social function involved, I'm probably right there. You know, and so me also, I mean, I would never, you know, label myself or put myself into a pigeonhole of saying, you know, that's what describes me. I will say that I find a lot of friends and like-minded people when I attend Tea Party events, you know, but I've been a Republican ever since I voted when I was 18 years old, taking my voting seriously. So I am part of the Republican Party. And I have a lot of really good friends who are Democrats, and you're one of them who is part, you know, a registered Democrat. So.
And you know, but see, this is what bugs me today is we are waging war among ourselves, and I think because we're so busy duking it out as Americans, we're not paying attention to the damage being done by some other folks who really don't have America's best interests at heart. And, you know, one of the things we keep hearing, oh, the Tea Party is negative, and they're this, and they're that, all this terrible stuff. And they know, when I speak, you know, I always make the point, I'm a Brooklyn Democrat, I vote as an independent, but first and foremost, I'm American. And the response I always get is amazing, so everyone's very fired up. Because that's what America is supposed to be about. Our political DNA is about discourse and discussion. The very First Amendment not only talks of freedom of press and religion, but about the right to seek redress of grievances, and boy, do we have a list of those. And the right for peaceable assemblage, because the founding fathers understood that the democratic process cannot go forward without, number one, an informed electorate, and number two, without public discourse. Have at it. Argue, discuss, if need be, yell at each other. That's cool. Just leave your guns, your clubs, and your knives at home, but have the debate. And what's amazing to me is that you have Republicans and Democrats, I think, trying to vilify the Tea Party on the one hand. On the other hand, trying to make believe they don't exist, because I think what scares them the most, and you're closer to this than I am, but my experience, and I've been to Tea Party events from Texas to Arizona to South Carolina to New Jersey to Connecticut, and you know what I find that's amazing? It seems to be about none of the above. Americans who look at both major parties, be they Democrats or Republicans, and say, you know, these parties aren't representing the average American any longer. And I think that there's lots of Americans who want to vote for none of the above, and that really has to scare you-know-what out of so many politicians and people who are depending on the American people being blind, dumb, and stupid. What do you think?
Oh, completely. You know, I mean, and the thing is that it's just chaos and really organized chaos, and it really, like Chris Christie, when he
yep.
first ran in Jersey, he ran on a Tea Party kind of ticket. He was Mr. Tea Party then. And Joe Wilson, who's been down here in South Carolina for years, was up there stumping at every single Tea Party on behalf of Chris Christie. You know, a lot of these guys that sort of ran like that and then now, you know, completely turn their back on it, it's the spin. And what they bank on is that Americans really have a very short memory, you know, and we're only really looking at what's in the room that we, you know, that we can see what's in the room with us right now instead of, you know, remembering what these people said, you know, last week.
Right. It's amazing.
So, yeah. So I really think most people who become situationally aware and do a little bit of research on their own, which is quite a few people in America. I mean, we really underestimate the American populace, because I think that a lot of people do know what's going on and are unhappy. They just aren't really sure how they can change it because it's so quickly on a dime, you know, massive laws can, you know, be changed or massaged, or even if they're not actually in place as a law, you know, manipulated so that it's as though.
Well, remember, we have a president with a phone and a pen, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, here's the thing, though. I had to laugh. One of the things that I was reading right before I got on was Trey Gowdy talking about Nancy Pelosi. And I guess he was kind of doing a little throw down the gauntlet with some of the verbiage he was using. I'm pretty sure he wasn't quoting you when he said that Nancy Pelosi was mind-numbingly stupid. Is that what he said?
I don't know, but okay, I'll go along with that.
Well,
I like Trey. I think he's a real good guy, you know?
Yeah, well, apparently he did, because one of the things that Congress is doing, and I will say some of the conservatives, you know, or apparently conservatives. And any politician, you have to watch them because, you know, they're inundated with lobbyists and they're inundated with temptations and, you know, they have to be sort of
campaign contributions.
Yeah, they need to have a circle of trust around them, you know,
yep.
accountability partners, so to speak. So so I guess Trey and some of the other House Republicans are trying to censure or maybe hold in contempt Eric Holder for Fast and Furious.
Yep.
And so I think that's really when
let me make two points. Before we get too far down the road, there's two things I want to comment on. Number one, Christy, and here's my observation.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know if the George Washington Bridge debacle was his or not, but certainly there's a wonderful Yiddish expression that says that when the fish goes bad, it smells from the head. And certainly the governor of a state sets the tone for his administration just like any leader does, just like Richard Nixon did with Watergate. And I think there's clear evidence now that Nixon certainly knew what was happening. But even if Christie didn't know, even if he did not know, it disturbs me that his people did what they did because, you know something, I understand if Christie and his people were angry at a mayor who wouldn't support his candidacy when Christie supported that mayor's candidacy. You know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, and politics is infamous for that. Also, you knife my back, I'll knife yours, I guess. But if Christie would have come out and supported the next guy to run against that mayor, I would have said, hey, that's what happens. I understand it, it's fair, it's reasonable. But to hold the residents of a town or a city the way they did, to screw with them to get even with a mayor shows the utter contempt that some people in power positions think they can treat the average American. Americans to these folks are collateral damage. We're going to damage that mayor, and if we have to make the lives of the residents of a town miserable, who cares? If an ambulance can't get through, maybe somebody dies, and an elderly woman did die under those circumstances, collateral damage. We have a political game to play, and we're not going to let the little people, as Leona Hemsley referred to the average American, you know, the little people pay taxes, I don't. The little people can get stuck in traffic jams, I won't. So this notion that it was acceptable to mess around with traffic and really make a shambles out of traffic for people in a town because the mayor did something that the governor didn't like, whether or not Christie knew about it, the fact that his people obviously thought that this was appropriate conduct tells you the way that the politicians consider the average American. They want our votes, and we get enough email from all the parties. They want our money. They want the contributions. But at the end of the day, they could care less, most of them. Most of them. There are exceptions. Jeff Sessions is one of my heroes. I think Trey Gowdy is a good guy. Lou Barletta, my buddy, absolutely, there's no doubt in my mind that he's dedicated to America, Americans. Steve King, another guy that puts America and Americans first. There are some others. I don't want to say this is the only people. But far
right.
too many politicians, I really think, don't give a damn about the average American, about the American dream for our children, about anything. It's about manipulating the people. It's not about leading, but by pandering to polls. Chasing a poll is like a dog chasing his tail. Instead of being leaders
yeah.
and saying, this is what we need to do, and laying out the reasons why and trying to bring the constituents along, they chase the constituent. But at the end of the day, the constituent is nothing more than cannon fodder when push comes to shove. What are your thoughts about what I just said?
Well, I really agree with you. And I think you hit it just right when you said that when a fish goes bad, it stinks from the head. And these people are in leadership positions. They have the ability to influence power over people. And I'll have to tell you that I think that where it's gone in America right now is that a lot of these people are such megalomaniacs and egomaniacs
yep.
and, you know, corrupt.
Self-absorbed.
And in some situations, I want to tell you, you know how, like, when you're looking at, like, you know, pathos as people are kind of growing up and, you know,
yep.
the kid who picks on the small animals or something or just, you know,
yep.
sort of plays games with the little kitten or, you know, a
yep.
hamster or something – just for the sake of it.
Yep.
Well, I
they do it because they can.
Analogy. Yeah, I do it because I can. And that's where we've really, I think we almost need to have these politicians go through multiple personalities, you know, the MMPI or something, because I think the level of pathos that has become acceptable at the head of the fish, at the leadership level, is it's all upside down. It's wrong. It's not what America was built on. It's not what the work ethic is. It's not what good and decent society and any sort of society, not just America, but any society, needs to function on basic virtues, you know, of honesty, truth, justice, these kind of things. Because if you're not constantly seeking these and being vigilant about protecting these virtues, you know, then the people who are sort of the bottom feeders have somehow risen to the top, and they're now creating the new standard for America. And it's really unacceptable, Mike. It really is. I mean, that is unacceptable. I see at the local level in the state of South Carolina so many things that are going on that are just absolutely unacceptable. And enough people are really starting to say, no, you know, we can't tolerate that. So there's different ways that you can vote people out. You can put, you know, pressure on people to say that you need to do the right thing and step down. But whatever it is, I really think that we need to not laugh these kind of incidents off anymore or let them just fall off of us like, you know, duck water on a duck's back. We need to take this seriously, because the telltale sign of how a society is going is how they're going to leave their society to the next generation. And when you look at what we're leaving now to the next generation, it's not a thing to be proud of. You know, debt, overwhelming debt at the federal level, at the state level, overwhelming people who are on welfare and who are on the government dole rather than being, you know, freed up with free enterprise and the banks loaning money. This Dodd-Frank Act is suffocating our country. So, you know, I'm in agreement with you about the Chris Christie thing. I think he needs to get in trouble for it. And I don't think that it needs to be compared to some of the worst things that other people have done. I think we do that all the time. We say, well, he's not as bad as that guy over there, so let's just live with him because he's not that bad. Well, no, bad is bad. Call it bad and take care of it. Right.
You know, it's funny. It's like if a cop abuses his authority. You know, there's such a thing as excessive use of force. And I hadn't even thought of that until our conversation. That's what I love about speaking with Lauren. She always gets me to think about different stuff that comes back to the issue. But, I, you know, as an agent, you know, we always, when we made arrests, had to use the jargon, and not just the jargon in our reports, but in the real world, the way we conducted ourselves. You always were supposed to use the minimal force necessary to effect an arrest. You don't beat a guy over the head with a baseball bat and say, well, I was using as much force as I felt like using. No, force is supposed to be used at a minimum, the minimum amount of force necessary to effect an arrest. And you have politicians today that are slamming us, as you say, because they can. It's like the kid with the magnifying glass that's burning ants and then gets to be a year or two older and is mortified at the thought of what he just did to some helpless creature just because he was able to do it, and it's horrible. Well, they're doing it to Americans, and they could seemingly care less, and that's the point that I don't get, that you have people that are saying, so be it. You have someone like an Alan Greenspan, and I keep reading this, but I can't say this often enough, folks, because Greenspan absolutely lit my fuse back on April 30th, 2009, when he testified for Chuck Schumer, and he actually referred to Americans with skills and education as the privileged elite. I mean, this is incredible. And he lied through his teeth when he said, our skill shortage, I trust, will ultimately be resolved by reform of our primary and secondary educational systems. We already have more than a 14% unemployment rate for high-tech workers in America, computer programmers, scientists, technicians, engineers, so-called STEM people, science, technology, engineering, and math. And we're turning out more engineers in our universities. Now, that 14% figure, by the way, is by the Labor Department that claims there's a 6.6% overall unemployment rate. So if you believe the labor statistics, and I don't agree with 6.6, I don't agree with 14, I think it's way higher, But the bottom line is even the Labor Department admits that there is twice as much unemployment. The unemployment rate is twice as high for high-tech workers as for the standard worker, the I don't want to say average worker, but workers who are not in the STEM fields. So with that kind of unemployment rate, what shortage are we talking about? And then when you read through Alan Greenspan's lines, and, you know, there's always this little joke, and to be slightly graphic, you know, you hold up your three fingers and you say to someone, read between the lines, and that's kind of what Alan Greenspan was doing to us, read between the lines. And it was a screw you to the average American. Because he goes on and talks about the bonuses of opening up immigration quotas. You know, Ted Cruz wants a 500% increase in the number of H-1B visas. 500%. 65,000 are admitted now. He wants that raised to 325,000. Comprehensive reform would have tripled the numbers. So these are all these politicians supposedly on the side of immigration enforcement, but no one is talking about how they want to import lots more people to compete with American workers. You would say, well, why in the world would you want to dump more high-tech workers into a country if it's high-tech American workers can't find jobs? And he actually tells us what he's thinking. It was in his testimony. And if you don't believe it, you can go to my website, michaelcutler.net, go to capsweb.org. And they've been running a whole bunch of articles, by the way, over at CAPS, about the impact of foreign workers coming to America and making it impossible for Americans to support themselves. But here is what Greenspan said. And as I said on a radio show years ago, right after the hearing, I was on with this young lady. She said, what'd you think of Greenspan? I said, he was the first person I'd ever seen who testified while suffering from rigor mortis. That's what I think of Alan Greenspan. But anyway, here was his statement as to why we need to greatly increase the quotas for high-tech workers. First, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will, of necessity, move into vacant housing units. Now, I'm going to stop for a moment. I want you to envision this. Those vacant housing units, ladies and gentlemen, are the homes of American families that were lost to foreclosure, largely because of the crisis that he created with his subprime mortgages, many of which, by the way, went to illegal aliens whose true identities couldn't be verified. Well, if you can't verify someone's identity, how do you do a meaningful credit check on them? Am I crazy, Lauren?
No, that was really a setup. I mean, we got nailed. Fell into the trap.
And now look what he wants to do. Now, Lauren, catch this. This is amazing. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Well, here comes fool me twice. Here it comes. And, of course, house price declines. This is Greenspan saying this now. House price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and the plunge in value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. So in other words, if we can bring lots of foreign workers and their families into America, and that's the goal, because not only would the Senate Immigration Bill, S-744, triple the number of H-1B visas, but it had another little zinger for us that nobody seems to have noticed. For the first time, it would permit the spouses and adult children. Now, there's an oxymoron, adult children of H-1B visa holders to get employment authorization documents. Now, this is what's amazing. If you are an alien in the United States and you have an employment authorization document, even though it's a temporary status, just like the Dreamers, while you have that status, you easily pass E-Verify, and you can take absolutely any job at all, provided you have the qualifications, irrespective of what harm it might do to American workers who are similarly employed or perhaps unemployed. So in other words, we would triple the number of H-1B visas and then allow all of their spouses and kids. So we're not just tripling the number of foreign workers. We could be increasing the number of foreign workers by a factor of 10. God only knows. And these folks could take any job they want. I'll give you an example. Papa Bear's a computer programmer. And let's say he really has a skill that's needed. He knows a particular computer language. It's in short supply. And let's say he goes to work for an auto company in Detroit somewhere or someplace in Michigan, Dearborn. Pick some company. And let's say he has three sons.
It sounds like you're creating an actually very real story that happens all the time. Yeah. So we're following
you. Well, that's the point, because people need to understand this is real world. This isn't hypothetical. It's hypothetical, but it isn't. And let's say he has three sons who are auto mechanics, and let's say there were 10,000 unemployed auto mechanics living in Detroit. Guess what? These guys who come here with their father, the computer programmer, have as much right to a job to walk into a dealership or a gas station with that employment authorization document and have an equal right to a job as an unemployed American who's about to lose his home to foreclosure. This is something else that comprehensive reform would do, and something that most Republicans favor. See, it's both sides of the aisle. That's why this primary is so darn important, folks. And I'm going to get to the primary in a moment, Lauren, but I want to finish what Greenspan said. Because if you're upset about this business about boosting the price of real estate and houses, that's just the appetizer. Here comes the main course. Because he was talking about his complaint that there's too much money concentrated in a particular sector, and the sector he's talking about is the middle-class American family, because here's what he says next. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of the skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism, and in the process, we have created a privileged elite. Don't you love those words? A privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. Here's the point. The laws now say, the immigration laws, the ones that the people in Congress don't like and want to change, right now they say you may not hire a foreign worker if there is an American worker who has the skills, the ability, and the desire and is ready to work in the same locale, the same geographic locale as that foreign worker. So if you've got an American, he gets the job and you don't get to file a visa. Guess what? We have lawyers coaching lawyers on how to circumvent that process by throwing in a little requirement, you know, that the guy has to have blue eyes and can't be any taller than 6 feet tall or whatever. I'm being a little silly here. But they find some little, you know, quirk that they can throw into the job description. And very often they put the ads in newspapers in other areas so you don't get responses to the ads because they have to show the Labor Department, oh, yes, we put an ad in the paper. You know, when you see all these ads, help wanted, and people say, wow, look at all those help wanted ads. Obviously, they don't have people to do the jobs. Half of those ads, folks, are being placed in those publications so the employer can go back to the Labor Department and say, well, we ran an ad. Nobody responded. That's why they post those ads. So you have an idea of how they're bringing folks in and make certain that Americans don't get the jobs so that the lawyers can get their hourly, their billable hours. And I know you're an attorney, and we need lawyers, and we need good lawyers in America. But we need lawyers who are ethical and understand that you don't destroy people's livelihoods in your own country. And there was an attorney, and Lou Dobbs ran this video, and if you go to michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org, I run this thing routinely up there. Go look at that video. It's about 4 minutes long, and you're going to want to punch the lights out of the guy on stage who says to the audience of lawyers, this may sound funny to you, ha-ha, but your job, funny as it might sound, is to make sure an American doesn't get any of those jobs that you post.
Right.
Now, I want you to understand that most members of Congress have not taken a strong enough position, with the exception of folks like Jeff Sessions, who is my hero. You know, I was on a radio show. I'm going to interrupt it. And Senator Sessions, if you or your staffers are listening, and if I embarrass you, forgive me. But I was asked by a reporter earlier this week if there was anybody that I thought should run for president in 16. And I thought for a moment, and I said, there's one person off the top of my mind, off the top of my head right now, and if he got to be president, the first day that he sat in the Oval Office would be the first night that I would get an honest night's sleep, a decent night's sleep. And you know who that is? Jeff Sessions.
Yeah.
What do you think of that statement?
Well, he is a good one, but I'm skeptical that you'll get a full night's sleep anyway, regardless of whether Jeff Sessions was in the Oval Office or not. But
That being said, he is a very good man, and we need good men and good women in all of these leadership positions. You know, what's happened is we've just elevated the president to a much higher position than the presidency, the Oval Office, ever really was supposed to ever have. And that's been part of it is accountability on American people. And let me just say something. We are players. We are players in a large stage of a very social experiment right now. We're living in an incredibly humanistic time where a lot of these leaders, the only thing that supersedes their arrogance is their ignorance. And that's why sometimes a lot of this stuff is just a house of cards. But you're dealing with people like Greenspan, who really is looking at the middle class, devaluing human life and putting it down at the most pragmatic base level. And we're part of a social experiment. And I will tell you that the reason why these leaders get away with doing what they do, the ones that aren't servant leaders or the ones that aren't aware of being their civic duty and taking their oath of office seriously, they are going to continue to go ahead and get along. And if they get away with it once, that inspires them to try to get away with it three different other ways. So in some ways, American middle-class people need to really look deeply into their own participation in this big theater that we call the United States of America and really know that we have allowed a lot of this to happen because we have not checked the bad behavior the way we really should have. And just like you said, you know, once that's shame on the other person, but twice that's shame on us. And over again, these guys are getting away with it. And it's sort of like, you know, an episode of Scooby-Doo, but where, you know, Shaggy and Scooby and Velma aren't around. So the people keep getting away with it and getting away with it. And there's nobody there who's taking the time or the energy or taking it the extra mile. And I have to tell you that what I've witnessed lately is that there's a lot of good people whose hearts are in the right place, but they work for the government so they can only go so far, or they're in the military, they can only go so far. And we have literally corralled our ability to do justice, our ability to do good things by self-imposed restraints that really shouldn't be there. And that's where I'm coming from, and I'm sort of witnessing it more at a local level, so that's where I'm coming from when I'm making these analogies. But I'm just simply telling you that if it does stink, you need to probe. If it stinks, people need to start filing Freedom of Information Act requests. People need to start looking to see who is getting, you know, county contracts or, you know, governmental benefits or some sort of a
and there's something else. And there's something else the American people can do. And here's a thought that occurred to me. You know, I've been speaking with both Lee Bright and Bill Connor in South Carolina. They are running against Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham, one of the eight gangsters. You know, here's something I want you folks to give some serious thought about, no matter where you live in the United States. It's very hard to know what's in another person's mind or heart. You know, we have polygraph machines, and they're really not as effective or consistent or accurate as we wish they were. But where immigration's concerned, we have a polygraph machine. We can look into the hearts and minds of members of the United States Senate who are running for re-election. Any senator who voted for S-744 flunked the loyalty test. Anybody who voted for S-744 thumbed his or her nose at the American people, at American middle-class families, and at national security. This notion that we can give millions, indeed likely tens of millions of illegal aliens, identity documents and lawful status when they evaded the inspections process that's supposed to keep transnational criminals, international terrorists, and others out of our country whose presence would be harmful, if you think it's appropriate, fair, reasonable, rational, moral, to provide millions of these folks with identity documents without the capacity to do a single, solitary interview or field investigation to make certain that there is no fraud, lies committed on the applications, you need to go. They just had two hearings in Washington before the House Judiciary Committee. Bob Goodlatte chairs the House Judiciary Committee. His hearings were spot on, showing a lack of integrity to the political asylum process. Now, what does that mean? It means that we are giving political asylum to aliens who are supposedly claiming credible fear. And quick background, those of you who listen to my program regularly, who've read my bio, I'm Jewish. My grandmother died in the Holocaust. I was named after my grandmother. She was in Poland. And although we don't know what her last days were like, I don't even want to think about it. When I watched Schindler's List, I almost found myself looking for her, looking for someone that I could recognize, because it was truly a window into the horrors of the Holocaust. 13 million people killed, 6 million were Jews. I'm a big fan of opening up America to political refugees whose lives are at stake because of their religion, their race, their ethnicity, tribal affiliation, or political views. I agree with it. I was a college kid, went to the Johnson White House with thousands of people to ask Johnson, President Johnson, to convince the Russians to let Jews and other minorities come to America, go to those countries that would have them. I was gratified as an immigration inspector back in the 1970s to admit political refugees into the United States, and there were only a handful that came every year. And when they walked into that room and they looked around and they saw the American flag, they started crying. They would hug me. Some of the women came over and kissed me on the cheek and thanked me. It was emotional for them. It was emotional for me. But the 9/11 Commission, folks, found that political asylum has become one of the methods of choice for terrorists to enter the United States and embed themselves in the United States, hide in plain sight. I just did two programs over at Fox News. About a week ago, yesterday I think it was, I was on with the delightful Megyn Kelly to talk about it. And then a couple days later, I was on Fox and Friends with Tucker Carlson, same issue, how the Obama administration is now lowering the requirements for people applying for political asylum. How it's now acceptable that they might have had incidental, casual, inadvertent contact with terrorists. Now, if the system had integrity, I'd be willing to consider that possibility. But a recent Washington Times report says that right now the fraud rate, the rate of lies and deceit committed in those applications for asylum, when we know this poses such a threat to national security, that fraud rate stands at about 70%. 70%. This is not the time or the set of circumstances under which we should make it that much easier for people seeking asylum to come here. 1993, a guy by the name of Mir Amil Kansi shot up the CIA. He was a Pakistani who applied for political asylum, killed two CIA officers, wounded three others. A month later, Ramzi Youssef, one of the key bombers at the World Trade Center, 1993, killed six, wounded over 1,000, inflicted a half billion, with a B, $500 million in damage to the Trade Center, almost brought those towers down sideways. I don't want to imagine what that casualty rate would have been. Then we had the Boston Marathon bombing, same deal. So we know there's no integrity. So here's my point. For those members of Congress who were at those hearings held by the House Judiciary Committee, by the Immigration Subcommittee, you've made your case. There is no way that this government can adjudicate applications for thousands of political asylum applicants, then there is absolutely no way that there could be a shred of integrity to any massive amnesty program, whether or not you want to call it amnesty. And now we have here in New York Mayor de Blasio proposing giving the Dream Act of sorts to New Yorkers who are here illegally as aliens, official identity documents here in New York, in New York City, claiming he needs to shield these aliens from what? Detection by law enforcement, the Joint Terrorism Task Force? Greg Bolt, who is the New York State Senator, and he's the chairman of the New York State Senate Homeland Security Committee, called me as I was heading down to a meeting in Washington earlier this week and told me that on February 28th, they're going to be holding a hearing in Lower Manhattan, literally in the shadow of the new Trade Center, and it's going to be a hearing on de Blasio's lunacy. This notion of providing identity documents to people who enter this country by violating our borders and our laws and whose true identities can't be determined. And here's my point, folks. The Republicans who don't want to bring an end to this talk about comprehensive reform, amnesty, or anything else, they need to be primaried into oblivion in the primaries. My fear is that the Republicans who keep swinging back and forth, these people are human metronomes. They're on one side today, the other side tomorrow, and then they flip back the day after. They move to one side to get the campaign contributions. They move to the other side to get the votes. And then there's another offer of a campaign contribution, and they flip back again. This has to stop. The best hope we have to kill comprehensive reform, any senator who voted for S-744 needs to be made to find a new line of work. Any member of the House of Representatives who has expressed acceptance of the idea of providing lawful status to millions of illegal aliens needs to be sent packing in the primaries. Don't even let them get to the general election, because if they get to the general election, I am convinced they will flip back again and work with the Democrats to undermine national security and the livelihoods of American workers. What do you think of my theory, Lauren?
Well, I do. I think everything you said is smack on point and describes the reality.
You've got to stop arguing so vociferously with me, Lauren. I've got to tell you, these fights have to stop.
It's unreal. I want to disagree with you, but I can't tonight. You know, if Eric Holder or any of the attorney generals were cutting edge doing what they were doing back to, like, you know, what I think it was Stephen Emerson and maybe Stephen Coughlin and some of those guys when they were in roles. But I'm talking about even, you know, the highest level attorney general. And this goes to my profession, which being an attorney is an important thing. It's been around for, you know, centuries, and, you know, the Pharisees were legalistic scholars, and, you know, laws have always been something that's important in a society, and it's important to balance it, too, between, you know, over-legalistic stuff and justice and common sense and, you know, equitable maxims. So what we've done here is everything that you just described should not even be allowed to be going on. Anybody who is doing what they're doing as far as, you know, ignoring the current laws, creating new laws, allowing illegal activity and aiding and abetting illegal activity should not only be voted out, they should be literally walked out in handcuffs. You know, that's the way that's supposed to go. But we have, it's the corruption is so high that it's really going to take an entire change of the regime. And, you know, Eric Holder has failed to, you know, really do what he's supposed to do as far as making sure that the laws are being enforced, the ones that are on the books that are there to protect the American people. And I believe that this is happening, you know, on an intentional schematic basis. And so one of the things that I want to relate to just a very small kind of, you know, trial that I'm having generally speaking is, you know, I do a lot of family court, and, you know, we just have to keep the main thing the main thing. And so as you're going through, you know, you end up pinpointing like maybe two or three or four bullet points that are really important that identify the issues. It may be custody. It may be equitable distribution. It may be alimony. It may be, you know, fees or something. But you can pinpoint it to very clear and concise issues and how to get from point A to point B in a very efficient manner. Now, in some of the cases that I have that need to spin out of control and want to get bigger, and maybe attorneys want to kind of, you know, work the file a little bit, make some fees and this kind of thing, in one case, it just comes down to there's not even really any children to deal with. They're all grown up. It really comes down to just, like, some equitable distribution and support issues. I was served with 2,000 beta stamped documents in this case, okay? And probably out of 2,000 documents that were beta stamped as evidence in this case in answers to discovery, probably only 70 of them were even important to what we're trying to get to. You know what I mean? And so this is what we've done. We have allowed a deluge of irrelevant, unimportant, you know, things to come into play that take our that distract us from what the really important thing is. And the main thing for America is to maintain our Constitution, to take an oath of office. And it's really simple. It boils down to very simple things. And what's happened, though,
is that there have been so many distractions and there's been so many successful and very, you know, good, very expert spin masters that have kept even the most decent people up there in Washington, you know, twirling and twirling and twirling. It's sort of like when you put your head on a baseball bat and just twirl and twirl and twirl and twirl and twirl, and then you try to walk, right? That's what they do. They take these halfway smart, halfway decent congressmen that come from, like, you know, good little towns and they're from good little families, and they stick their heads right on a baseball bat and they have them spin for a few times. And then, you know, the clarity goes away. And this is what we're missing in America, is just clear thinking and then clear action that comes from not immediate thinking where you make a decision in 5 minutes that's going to affect, like, five generations. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, I know. Well, you know, I compare it to the magician whose little scantily clad assistant comes out and they dance around to music and no one knows where to look. It's a three-ring circus. You're busy looking to one side. Meanwhile, things are happening on the other side. And it's hard to keep track of everything that's going on. And one of the things that this administration has been very good at is a shotgun approach. We don't just wind up dealing with one issue. We're hit by a fusillade of issue after issue after issue, sometimes two and three at a time. You know, you spoke about Fast and Furious, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say something about that also, and I want to do that before we run out of time. I spent several years, I worked with the folks at ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and I could tell you that every time we took a gun out of a house that was owned by a drug dealer, by a murderer, by some real piece of detritus, with the drug task force, the cases we worked weren't people generally selling, you know, little bags of marijuana on a street corner. We were dealing with people that were really major players, where they might have been involved with multi-kilo amounts, sometimes tonnage, actually. Tonnage, if you could picture that. So when we took guns out of that house, there were a lot of fist bumps and a lot of chest bumps and a lot of celebrating, almost kind of like the way you would expect to see baseball players react when a teammate hits a home run. And to think that ATF was twisted sideways, and look at the agents who came forward knowing that they were destroying their careers. I certainly relate to that. You know, I was asked by Tom Tancredo to testify about what happened on 9/11 in terms of immigration, and because he at the time chaired the House Immigration Reform Caucus. And initially he asked authorization from my agency so that I could testify. That was my request when he asked me if I was interested. They initially said yes, and then 3 hours later they called him back and said, no, he may not. And they contacted me and said, what do you want to do? And it took me a couple of weeks to decide whether or not I was going to be willing to go and testify before that caucus hearing where they could not protect me with a subpoena and where I knew that they'd be held to pay afterwards. It's kind of like calling it an airstrike on your own position, but I did it. Of course, I lost my job. I was out with an injured leg at the time. It was the third time I got hurt making arrests. It's certainly a contact sport, so to speak. We eventually got it fixed. But it was amazing that the reaction was swift. In less than 24 hours, I received an overnight package telling me I was no longer an agent, ostensibly because of my injured leg. The timing was just too obvious. But, you know, you have to stand up. And we saw ATF agents standing up, knowing full well what would happen to them. And so you look at how an agency whose primary mission, just like immigration's primary mission, is to get illegal aliens off the street, discourage illegal immigration. ATF is supposed to discourage the possession of weapons by people who pose a threat to public safety. To imagine ATF conducting an investigation that put thousands of high-powered weapons into the hands of the Mexican cartels, some of the most vicious, violent, pernicious criminals on the planet, and knowing that ultimately those guns would make their way back to the United States. I mean, Border Patrol agent Brian Terry was killed by one of those guns. I would doubt that even as we speak, those guns are sitting in places around the United States, maybe even here in New York, maybe down there in South Carolina. Because all of the narcotics that's consumed in the United States, folks, all of the cocaine, all of the heroin, those rat poisons come from outside the United States, smuggled here by some of the lowest scum on the planet, the drug traffickers. And so nobody ever talks about the drug trafficking organizations, except now that an actor died from an overdose, suddenly people are talking about heroin. And I want to make a point today that I made when I was on with Neil Cavuto a while back. Neil asked me, he said, you know, Mike, Border Patrol arrested down, so it would seem to indicate that there are fewer illegal aliens in the United States. What do you think? And I said, well, first of all, I don't trust those statistics, unfortunately. This administration has more than a little bit of what we used to say about the Johnson administration when we talked about a credibility gap for those of you old enough to remember the LBJ administration. But I said, simply looking at the Mexican border is foolish, and that's what we keep doing. We are a country of 50 border states. Any state with a seaport or an international airport is a border state. And also the Canadian border is a border as well. But the point of the matter is that the real metric for border security, having spent 4 years at DEA Intelligence, Unified Intelligence Division in New York, having spent 10 years after that as a senior special agent assigned to the Drug Task Force, I don't just look at aliens being smuggled across that border. I look at narcotics coming across that very same border. So here's the point, folks. If the borders were secure, heroin and cocaine would be in short supply. The price would go through the roof because that's how classic economics works. When that actor overdosed, there were lots of reports in the media about how cheaply heroin could be acquired on street corners around New York and around the country. If the price for heroin is down, and studies that I've read say that heroin use has more than doubled since President Obama took office, that means that the pressure on the supply has more than doubled. The price should have gone up, instead it's coming down. Do you want to know if the borders are secure? You look at the ease with which an addict can find heroin, and there's your barometer. And I will tell you that I don't believe that our borders are anything more than a speed bump to the smugglers, whether they're bringing in drugs, whether they're bringing in illegal aliens, or, God forbid one day, a weapon of mass destruction. We're at risk because we have politicians from both sides of the aisle who want to have a debate about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, about how important it is to not deport 11 million since we can't deport them all anyway, and who say to you, well, it's not fair because Americans really don't want their neighbors and the people that they go to church with to be deported from the United States. Well, I have a response for that. The American people want to be safe. They don't want to face another terrorist attack. They don't want the violence that comes with drug use in America, and it's believed that the great majority of crime in this country, directly or indirectly, is drug-related. And the average American wants to have a secure future economically for himself, herself, and their children, and their children's children. That's the reason we have borders. That's the reason we have immigration laws. And to hear this circumlocution, this circular speech that goes on and on ad nauseum when you speak to some of these alleged representatives, and I use that term loosely, they're fooling nobody but themselves. But it's up to the American people to send them packing. We are the employers of these folks. We keep forgetting that. We're impressed by their fancy titles. But they work for us. And if they were a stockman in your factory, if they were a waiter in your restaurant, and they showed up late and stole stuff out of the supply room, how long would you allow them to continue to have the privilege of a paycheck that you pay them? If you believe that your elected representative isn't representing you, start with the primary, boys and girls. Go after them in the primary so they don't even make it to the general election. Put them up against like-minded candidates who will run against them ideologically on the same side so that they don't do a cakewalk with the Democrats, for example, after the general election and then jam comprehensive reform down our throats. This would be disastrous for America, and the primaries across America, in my judgment, are the best opportunity that America has to end this nonsense of comprehensive reform, which I call the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. Your thoughts, Lauren? I'm sorry to have gone on for so long.
No, I was just going to say, amen, brother. You were you just hit it. That was preaching at the choir, and I hope that there's a lot of listeners out there because what you just said was great. And also, Mike, you know, for next week or in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to send you the telephone information for Brandon Darby, who you met. He's with Breitbart in South Carolina, and he's out of Texas. And some of the ladies out of Texas, I know Meryl Hope was sending you a big hello from Texas, and Alice Linehan and all those ladies down there.
So I know that they'd be interested. And then hopefully maybe in one of your upcoming radio shows, you can actually interview maybe with Lee Bright or with Bill Connor, who are both running against Lindsey Graham now. And, you know, you're right, a lot of great people in South Carolina are getting out, and they're doing things that they've never done before, you know, going door to door, you know, making contributions, helping in whatever way they can. And it is not a spectator sport. You say this a lot. It's a verb, you know. I mean, when you're dealing with things that affect you, like your ability to get a loan at a bank or your ability to buy a piece of property or, you know, your ability to choose how to, you know, maybe homeschool or school your children, these are important, you know, fundamental rights of American citizens. And in order to have those and keep them, it's only one generation away from losing them entirely. It literally is an action word. It's where you need to get up and you need to put your, you know, shoes on and tie your laces and start running, you know, and start moving. And so I just wanted to let you know that I really agree with everything. I'm so thankful that you are as involved as you are. And, you know, looking forward to the next time that I can join you on a show, and looking forward to getting you some of these contacts with some of these other people who also share some information too.
That's excellent, Lauren. I appreciate it. Yes, Merrill and all those folks, and Brandon, all those folks out there, I look forward to speaking with them. I look forward to maybe visiting with them in their hometowns. You know, we've got to take this show on the road, folks. If mainstream media is refusing to cover the subject, there's an antidote. And I'm willing to come out to your areas. I've done public speaking tours all over the United States. And I'm certainly willing to hop on an airplane and come out to your neck of the woods. You can reach me through capsweb.org. You can reach me through michaelcutler.net. And I really want you to go to capsweb.org. You know, again, I hate to keep beating on this, but it's so important. It's important to read what experts have to say on issues that relate to the failures of our government to secure our borders, enforce our immigration laws, and put the needs and desires and dreams of Americans ahead of folks from other countries. And it's not that I'm not compassionate. You know, the other side want to make us into villains. Oh, you don't care about those people that are starving in other countries. I do. But charity, folks, begins at home. Right now, we have 1 in 4 American children going to bed hungry, living below the poverty line in America. It's incredible.
Well, and Mike, I have to tell you, too, about the drugs and stuff. And this is where Americans just need to smarten up and, you know, get situationally aware. I mean, we just don't need to be strung out. And, you know, prescription drugs are a big problem, too, an epidemic, really. But, you know, in one of the local high schools here, since the beginning of the year, since the Christmas break, 8 students have left the high school in an ambulance because they have almost OD'd on what's called Xanny bars. They're Xanax bars, and they pop them, and sometimes they'll mix them with other stuff. But these are between, you know, 9th and 12th graders. And what they don't realize is they think it's just, oh, teenagers being teenagers, or they're, you know, got a hip-hop song or whatever. The bottom line is that there are predators out there. There are predators that market and make a lot of money off of stupidity of the people. And so how can you also stop that is try to not be so completely stupid. And that's just the bottom line is I get teenagers have risky behavior and, you know, people market to that. But we need to just tighten it up a little bit, tighten the ship up and just, you know, be the standard that you know, the best generation and the founding fathers envisioned for us. You know, they didn't envision third world country living. They didn't envision oppression or people strung out on varieties of different drugs, you know. And in another case I had, you know, people are talking about how steroids come in from China, and they put the little vials of the steroids in these little lint brushes, these little lint cylinders, and just mail them through the U.S. mail. And then they go and get veterinary needles, you know. It's insane. And people are always going to try to do, you know, the naughty bad thing or get the quick fix or, you know, kind of stuff like that. But I think it's an education issue, too. And I don't think that we're necessarily going about, you know, handling that quite right. There's things that we can do better, I think. And once we recognize that maybe we could do things better, maybe better things, the standard will be risen again, you know?
Oh, I agree with you, but it's got to start with the activism of the American people. I mean, look, you're an activist. I'm an activist in my own way. I'm kind of a pot stirrer, if you will, and I try to wield the biggest ladle possible. But, you know, we have a responsibility. And, you know, just as we try to be good parents to our children by setting standards for them and providing them with opportunities, one of the big opportunities we need to provide for our children, folks, is a country that they can have a secure future in, a future where the American dream is alive and well for American kids. And it's so outrageous when the other side says, well, you're just not compassionate. No, I am compassionate, but a responsible parent doesn't give money to charity when his or her own children are going to bed hungry at night. Our children are going to bed hungry at night. And as much as you want to help people around the world, it starts here. And you know what I find so upsetting? I spoke to a reporter recently, and she was a major, major publication, respected throughout the world. I mean, we're talking big time. And she interviewed me because of this forthcoming New York State Senate hearing that's going to be held in Lower Manhattan in just about another 2 weeks. And I decided I'd try something different. And I asked her, I said, do you know what's in the immigration law in terms of who we're supposed to keep out of the United States? And this reporter said, no, I don't know. And I thought, my goodness gracious, here is a journalist for a major publication doing an article that's going to be read by God knows how many millions of people, unaware of what's in the immigration law. When we talk about drunk driving offenses, everybody knows that most states have lowered the acceptable blood alcohol level down to 0.08. Everybody knows it. But when you talk to a reporter about immigration, I said, let me give you a hint. There's nothing in the immigration laws about brown skin or green skin or purple skin. It's about keeping out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who are mentally ill and are violent or sex offenders, aliens who are convicted felons and fugitives from justice, war criminals, spies, and terrorists. I said, did you know that? No, I didn't quite know that. I said, well, do you understand that if you ask the average person, do you think we should keep terrorists and gang members out of America, do you know of anybody who would say, no, we don't need to do that? Of course everyone would say keep them out. But it's the very same people who will say keep them out who will then very easily say, but you got to give identity documents to illegal aliens without connecting the fact that maybe the reason they came in illegally is because they're spies or terrorists or gang members and know that they couldn't come in legally, so they snuck in so they can do their dirty work from within the United States. You know, I just leave you with a thought on that one. The former mayor of New York, Bloomberg, supposedly a conservative. I don't know what he is. He's one of the top 1/100th of 1%ers. And, you know, they did a study, and I just saw it before I left South Carolina. If you took all the world's wealth, divided it in half, so that all of humanity was on one side, do you know how many people would be on the other side of the scale balancing it because they control the other half of the world's wealth? 85 people.
Huh.
Starting, by the way, with Carlos Slim, the wealthiest man in the world, who happens to be a Mexican, by the way, living in Mexico.
Correct.
But the idea that Bloomberg, who's probably one of those 85 they talked about, along with Gates and the others, actually said that the district attorney in the Bronx, New York, was wrong for not prosecuting people who trespass into the housing project, because he said if you have people trespassing, they're going to do harm to you. You need to lock them up and prosecute people who trespass. But meanwhile, he maintains sanctuary policies for aliens who trespass on America. That's astonishing.
Insane.
That's astonishing. Mm. This disconnect, folks, we the people can make that connection for our elected representatives. Hold them up to the stupidity of their own words because they lack what I call mouth-ear coordination. Their own ears don't hear what their own mouths are saying. And we could make that change by going to them and saying at a town hall meeting, you said this, what about that? McCaskill, the senator, screamed bloody murder how Snowden got a security clearance. Screamed bloody murder how the Navy Yard shooter got a security clearance, but is an advocate for comprehensive reform. Well, why doesn't anyone say to McCaskill? Because I tried to and they wouldn't return my phone call. I did speak to a staffer. I said, if you're worried about how we give clearances to people, why aren't you worried that we would be potentially giving millions of green cards to aliens without so much as a face-to-face interview, so we don't know their name, we don't know their country of citizenship, and we don't know anything about their background? And you know
that's
what the
right.
answer
well,
was?
Mike,
there was no answer.
Right. Well, you definitely have to get to the sources who are reporting the truth. You know, things like Brandon Darby with Breitbart and those kind of guys. Because you hit the nail on the head. I mean, nobody's reading anything. We're doing our research from Wikipedia.com, and half of that stuff, you know, isn't necessarily completely on point, you know. And we've got people who are journalists who are writing things, but they're listening to the propaganda. They're listening to the what's in the room at the moment or, you know, the feel-good stuff or whatever they think is going to sell, rather than truth seekers. We have completely failed in the last couple generations, except for a few that stand up, and you know that I'm so blessed to know so many of them. I've been honored to meet so many truth seekers lately. But people who just really say, hey, look, let's find out what the truth is here. Let's try to, you know, problem solvers. And when you get down to, there's 85 people who are like the, whatever you want to call it, the creme de la creme, they're the new, the best, you know, their genetic pool is like the highest, or, you know, whatever you want to say, that never works, okay? I mean, it just doesn't work. But Bloomberg and all those guys, they really do think that their arrogance is only outweighed by their ignorance in some of this stuff. And it's really up to American people to read, do their research, do their homework, and follow through. So.
I couldn't have said it better myself, kiddo.
All right. Well, listen, happy Valentine's Day. You better get to your wife and give her, you know, some chocolates or roses or something or both.
There you go.
And I am going to go join my family and hang out for a little bit and enjoy, you know, it's still chilly down here, so we got the heat on and, you know, just enjoy hanging out on a Friday night. We are so blessed to live in this wonderful country that we live in. Our Lord, you know, I know you know that I'm a little bit more, I'm religious, and I just believe that he has blessed our country, and we do, you know, we're just very, very, you know, we just shouldn't take it for granted. I mean, the wonderful
Absolutely
things that we
not.
Have, be able to have this kind of conversation on a radio show and to have good friends that are up in New York and we're all across the country, it's great, you know, and so... Have a great weekend.
You too, kiddo. Tell the gang out there, tell your friend Susan and the rest of the gang in South Carolina, I say hi. You know, I'm hoping to be back down there within the next few weeks. I hope that this all comes together. And for those of you out there, as I've said, if you're interested in having me do a town hall meeting or a debate, whether it's a college campus, whether it's on the campaign trail to educate the voters, I'm ready, willing, and able. Just reach out to me, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org. This is really important, folks. We need to get together. We need to forget what part of the country we're from. We need to forget about the relatively minor stuff that we may disagree about. We need to be united on one issue, that our country's borders and immigration laws are our first and last line of defense, and any politician who doesn't understand that fundamental concept needs to find a new way to earn a living, or actually to make a living. I'm not sure if half of those congressmen are earning a living. Some of them are. Some of them are doing the right thing, but for those who are not, maybe you need to think about another way of occupying your days rather than wasting our time and undermining America's national security. We can't secure this country unless our borders are secured and our immigration laws are enforced with integrity. Not the illusion, the reality has to be that there's real integrity to the enforcement and administration of those immigration laws. And that's really what that's all about. Lauren Martell, I look forward to speaking with you soon, and I hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy everyone's company out there. Enjoy the beautiful neck of the woods that you live in. I will tell you, South Carolina is a stunning place to be.
Thank you so much, Mike. I'll talk to you later. Have a good
one. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night, kiddo. Bye-bye. That was Lauren Martell. She's a good friend and a great American, and it's always great being with you on Friday nights to catch up, try to make sense of this wacky world that we live in. But again, folks, as Lauren started to kind of quote me, democracy truly is not a spectator sport. I need you to go out there, speak to your neighbors, tell them about my program, tell them about those two great websites, especially capsweb.org. Also visit my website, michaelcutler.net. I have a new commentary that will be published within the next couple of days. On the CAPS website. I'm very much looking forward to that being published on their website because I do write for them regularly, which is a good thing. It gives me an opportunity to provide the insight that I don't think that you're going to get anywhere else. I mean, that's really what this is about, is to provide the information and the insight that unfortunately is lacking all too often in the news these days. We've got to really educate ourselves. That's really and truly what this is all about. And so between now and next week, I hope you guys all have a wonderful week. Have a great weekend. Stay warm. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. And we'll see you the same time next week right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. So long.